accession number 3790, reel 8.
Mr. Johnson, reel 8.
Mit Leonard auch und Kantner und Kantner. Well, is it on now?
Yes.
I see. Well, you said fighting against our own country, my own countrymen. Well, didn't have a German passport, or rather my German passport had expired. I had hoped I'd become British sometime. I got my permanent labor permit in June or July 1939. And consequently, I theoretically could have applied for naturalization then, but I wouldn't have got it. And I did not see myself as a German, although I was born in Germany. I mean, I cut off my ties by coming to England, and that was that. And for that reason, I did not consider the Germans my countrymen. You better ask a question, I don't know.
You didn't, in fact, go overseas anywhere near that time.
I see, now I find the trend, sorry. Well, the thing is, you see, as we were going as foresters over, we knew that we would not go over as actual fighting units. And we were scheduled to go out D plus 17, which meant 17 days after the 6th of June. But as there was still heavy fighting between Bayeux and Saint Lô, and the spot where we were to go with the Canadians was a few miles towards the coast from Saint Lô. I don't actually Saint Lô is west. We were further towards the coast from Saint Lô and from Balroy, known as Balroy. We couldn't go, and we actually went out only D plus 51, which I think must have been about the 5th or 6th of August. And I better carry on after.
Well, this is 1944.
Oh, yes, but in between.
Going back, in between. You
yes, I know, I have to go back. I have to go back, exactly, quite. I was in Petersfield, right here, Borden. And from there we went to a detachment, the Iver, I think. Yes, Iver. And around the corner from the Coppins, where the Duke of Kent's family lived. And there we were doing 42, 43. Yes, of course, it was 43. 43, 44. Well, anyway, forget. Let me see. 40, Christmas 42, I was in Gloucester. Christmas 43, I was in Whitehill. So after Christmas, beginning of 44, we went to Iver. And there we were sent. We had coaches waiting to take us every morning to Ivor Heath, to Pinewood Studios, where we were painting tents with hard brooms. And when the weather was fine, outdoors. And if the weather was poor, indoors, in the studios.
What was the purpose of that?
Well, we had the camouflage tents, which were to be used in France. The bell tent, holding 12 men. And the platoon, with section 5 and 6 under. Oh yes, I forgot about that. Never mind. We were in Nissenhut on a small estate in Iver, and were taken by a coach to Iver Heath, as I said. And Lieutenant Rhodes was in charge of us. That was the chap who'd been from the Workers' Educational Association. He stayed with us for a while. And And quite a number of our chaps went home every night after work to stay with their wives overnight. And I know it wasn't Rhodes. Rhodes had left us. We had a Lieutenant Davis by that time. He was a journalist, very nice chap. And he went home, and unfortunately, sometimes on the Uxbridge bus, the lieutenant and the men came back to camp. And so one evening he got us on parade, and he said, look, it's a bit awkward for me to see you traveling on the bus with me, because I am on a pass and you're not on a pass. Can't you find a way around it that you're not traveling on the same bus as I? I don't mind if you go to spend the night or the weekend with your wives, as long as you're at the working place. So it was very simple. You see, there is a bus from Uxbridge via Iowa to Slough, and there's another bus from Uxbridge via Iowa East to Slough. And so our chaps took their private kit with them, put it over the put the uniform in a bag, and went home in civvies, and they had breakfast at home and met us outside the works gate, outside Pinewood Studios at Iowa East. And this thing was solved. And when we were at Iowa, Pinewoods, the Royal Mint had a factory in the compound in which 3,000 pounds worth of Sripney bits, of the octagonal Sripney bits were made. And a Bank of England lorry came to collect them every morning. In the studios, they were making also the instructional films for the commandos. And there was a little dune overlooking a pond of water where the commandos were being trained in active combat. That was filmed for instructional films. And the Bolting brothers, one of them was a Lance Corporal, leading aircraftman, and the other one was a private, was an aircraftman in the Air Force. They were the cameramen, and they were shooting Sunday Metro London, the backdrop of which was still shown in one of the studios. They were shooting a film which originally was to be meant called Convoy, but it was later on called Western Approaches. And that was shot on a tank, enormous tank, which stood about 2 foot high, canvas tank filled with water. The continuity girl was a wren, and naval personnel were its advisors there. On the tank, on the tank with water, floating was an E-boat, a German E-boat, shooting with an electrically controlled machine gun at a tanker. And the tanker at one stage had a charge in it and jumped out of the air about 8 inches out of the water, and you could see it folding up by the, what is it called, the thing?
Hinge?
Yes, the hinge bending together. And you could see that in the photograph, apparently. And they had, took them a fortnight to build a new one, and they had to reshoot the scene. Anyway, this was one of the amusing things. But in order to get the air dry, as it was very damp at the time, they used sulfur fumes to dry the air, and we poor buggers had to breathe those in. And of course, we got coughing fit, and as they were doing talkie, of course, they got that on the recordings, and they had to reshoot.
Could you tell me about preparing to go over to France?
Well, this is part of the preparing. They also were shooting a film there, which they're going to call Air Crew, which later on came out as The Way to the Stars. And we had quite a... Deborah Kerr was on the set, and quite a number of American Americans actors came over to coming to France. Well, from there we went to another camp, went to other camps. You see.
I see. Tell me about that.
Well, anyway, from we were inoculated with TAB and typhus, typhoid injection, smallpox when we were in Ivor. Given a week, 3 days off after the injections, and I made my first visit to Windsor Castle with some friends, and I posed them in front of Windsor Castle, photographed them. And then we had a medical inspection in Slough, which was very amusing. The local medical officer, army medical officer, was a woman captain, and the men were all looking forward to having their medical inspection, FFI as it was called, by a woman medical officer.
For venereal disease.
For venereal diseases. Mm. And as there was a woman medical officer, of course she had to be protected by a male medical orderly, so that nothing would happen to her. They marched in one by one, and the medical inspection went like this. Is there any? Do you think you have got anything wrong with you? Any AVD? No, madam. Take out you marched, and she believed us. Well, it was very unlikely that any of us had VD. Anyway, from Tewkesbury, I'm sorry, from Ivor, we were sent first to Tewkesbury because we were in this waiting period, you see. We were supposed to go at D plus 17, so we had to be shoved around to wait to go over to France. And so we were sent first to Tewkesbury, and we stayed at a place overlooking Tewkesbury. Oh, yes, in between we were sent a boat on the water at one stage. I don't know when it was. We went first to boat on the water, and where we stayed at the MYTHE, M-Y-T-H-E, which belongs to the Holiday Fellowship. And from boat on the water, we went to Tewkesbury. And at Tewkesbury, we were loading grain in the local grain mill. And the more wealthy boys amongst our lot, amongst them was Teddy Rosenthal of Rosenthal Porcelain, and there was a chap from a store, it was a well-known souvenir store in Berlin, which had a shop in Knightsbridge. He was amongst our rich boys. They went to the local pub, the most expensive pub in Tewkesbury, and our officers didn't get a look in it. They're very, very annoyed about it. When we went to Tewkesbury, two of our boys got drowned in the weir when they went boating. Anyway, from Tewkesbury, we went from Tewkesbury on. I did some photographic work for the YMCA, snapshot from Home League, which I'd also done from Gloucester, taking photographs.
Where was it that you had the commando and map reading exercises?
Oh, that was in Tewkesbury. That was the bloodiest joke. Our lieutenant was Lieutenant Stark. I met him afterwards as a clerk in the fur trade. He couldn't read a map, but he taught us map reading. And he took us on a route march, and luckily he gave the map and the compass to the corporal, to Corporal Crow, who was a good map reader. And we went on a 6-mile route march, and at the end of the route march, we got back to the camp. Crow called us in. He said, you know, if we would have followed his Lieutenant Stark's instruction, we would have finished in Gloucester and not in Tewkesbury. Anyway, in Tewkesbury they gave us so-called commando training, and they built a wall, and we had to climb the wall. Well, I couldn't get over, so somebody had to help me up and to get me a course. But anyway, from Tewkesbury we went to a place outside Bishop Stortford called Saffron Walden for a couple of weeks before we then were sent from there to Lewes, and from Lewis by lorry to a place which I've now recognized on the map as Firl House in Firl Park, F-I-R-L-E, and there we were waiting for crossing to France. Well, when we got to Lewis, some of our boys realized that their wives were in Brighton, and so they absconded overnight and went to Brighton and saw their families. Some of our chaps went to a local pub and they wanted to find out where we were. Of course, they got dirty looks, asking with a German accent where we were. But anyway, they were not locked up, and they all got back to the camp. And after two or three nights at Firl Park under canvas, we were taken down to New Haven and onto landing barges and LCIs. And we discovered that next to us were the landing barges for 74 Company, which meant that the originally 15 alien companies had come down to 74 and 220. And 74 was disbanded whilst we were in Belgium, and so there was only 220 left. So we were the last company to survive. Anyway, as I was well loaded with medical supplies and supplies which I had gunnerved on the ship coming back from Australia against seasickness, I was very popular with the people who felt seasick on the ship. On the ship, we were issued with self-heating tins of cocoa and oxtail soup, which was a innovation. The chemical part was done by ICI for Heinz, and it was a tin which held just over half a pint of liquid and had a tube with asbestos powder, and the lid could be lifted off with a jackknife, and you put a lit cigarette end into the asbestos and to heat it up. Well, unfortunately, nobody read the instructions. The instructions said you have to punch a hole into the tin before you light it. And most of us didn't see that, because it was dark after all. So when the thing got hot in our hands, we punched a hole into the tin, and very often the liquid went in our face. I gave one of the cocoa tins to the Imperial War Museum, which I kept as a souvenir. Anyway, my main client on this trip across the channel was our quartermaster sergeant, who had frogs in his tummy, and he was terribly afraid, and I got him dosed down with seasick pills. Anyway, I got rid of most of mine to the crew and to the staff, and we had quite a pleasant crossing over to Arromanches, to the very magnificently built Bailey Harbour, which was certainly worthwhile looking at. Anyway, when we got to Arromanches, we were unloaded and billeted first in a field for a night, and I was told that we were strafed in the next morning, but I don't recollect that. But anyway, when we got to our field, our sergeant major came around and said, "Now, I don't want you to be an attraction to the Germans. You better get your dubbin out, dubbin your badges, and dubbin the buttons on your greatcoats if you haven't already got the Bakelite buttons." Most of us already had scrunched Bakelite buttons for our coats, so that didn't happen. And next morning on parade, our captain, whom we called Heydrich, complained that our badges were not shining. And so the Sergeant Major Hemmings, I think it was Hemmings still, I don't know if he was posted back before, our Sergeant Major said, "Lieutenant, whatever was his name, if you have gilded badges, the eye attraction, the reflection, eye attraction to German planes. I have given the instruction for shoe polish to be used on them, and my men are not going to wear anything but black badges, unless they've got the plastic badges, which showed the stupidity of our officers. Anyway, from this, after this one night in the fields outside Bayeux, we were sent by lorry to a place just past what was known as Oxford Circus. Well, Oxford Circus was around about, and when you went further inland in one direction, you came to Saint-Lô, and when you went in the other direction, you went by a place called Balroy to Caen and Falaise, where the tank battles had taken place, which held up our progress. Anyway, we went to a place in the woods and put up our tents, and the Canadians received us, and we went first to their hut for the first day's meal, and we went to work next day, and they showed us, the Canadians showed us how to make beds. We used slab wood, which is the outer part of the cut timber, which is bent on the outside like the tree and straight inside, and they showed us how to make beds, and they told us there was a headquarter near here. You get yourself signal wires and you put the base, fix that together, and then you put your pedals on top. Well, we didn't. The signal wires we got were actually from Monty's previous headquarter. And when we got there, Monty apparently was still in the region with his command van, but we didn't know, because the woods are dark and the area was big, and these wires came in very, very useful. And there was a sawmill, which I never saw, but I was in the bush, and I was happy. I had a twin-headed axe. I'm not sure if it was an Elwell or braid axe. It was a magnificent job, but unfortunately, a few days after using the double-headed axe, I had to sharpen it with my carborundum stone and knocked it into a tree, and whilst I was sharpening one end, the thing came unstuck and fell out of the tree and cut my hand.
Your right hand?
My right hand, between the thumb and the index finger, and I had a cut which was about 2 inches long and bled like hell, but of course it was not an important spot, so I went to see the Canadian medical orderly. He said it's quite an easy job. He said you just push the thing together, the edges, and I put some M&B powder on it and strap it up and just heal it up that way. As simple as that. And you leave that on for a week and then come to see me. And it healed up. And I used the same method later on in an accident which I described later. Anyway, we had a very good time there under canvas. As I was a former Boy Scout, I wasn't worried about being under canvas, even if it rained for weeks. And the timber we cut went mainly to the mines again and used for the bridges, which we hope to build over the Rhine. And we noticed that the Canadians, the men, the NCOs and officers all messed together, which was an eye-opener to our officers again. We were a stuck-up lot. And we picked blackberries in the woods. We went to the farms, to the farmers, and bought butter and bought eggs. And we were strictly forbidden by our officers to buy butter and eggs because they were contaminated, because the French farms are very, very dirty, and the water was very dirty. Well, what actually was the reason why we were forbidden to do that was because the orderly of our officers couldn't get anything because we were ahead of them, because we spoke better French than they did. And we didn't take very much notice of their orders. And one of my mates, Georgie Burns, who came from the Czech-German border of Silesia, he knew something about mushrooms. And he said, "Johnny, come out, let's pick some mushrooms." And he showed me what to pick. Well, at that time, I only knew the chanterelle. And anyway, he taught me a few things, and we went collecting mushrooms. In the first half an hour, we had 20 pounds. And we took that back, and we never went back to the cookhouse. We cooked our mushrooms every night with cheese and eggs, butter or margarine. And the cheese we had from the guards ration, the margarine as well, but we got butter from the farms. And we cooked our own dinners, and everybody was very pleased when we invited them to have a meal. And the sergeants were suggested we should supply the mess, but the sergeant major was afraid that we might poison him. So they were not in on it. And then a rabbi came to conduct the service, which meant we couldn't wash before our dinner, which was a bloody nuisance. And he was not a very considerate person. He was a Mancunian. He gave us a lot of tripe in his sermon, and we just took the mickey out of the orthodoxy. He said, "This is the sort of rabbis you produce." And then we were sent something.
While you were in the army, in general, how well were you able to keep Jewish ritual and Jewish festivals?
Well, we had only one very orthodox member in our unit. His name was Heckscher. He came from Hamburg, and the chief rabbi had absolved us from eating non-kosher food. But the majority of us didn't keep kashrus anyway, so it didn't matter. It was only essential for Heckscher. But Heckscher was supplied with tinned kosher food, tinned meat, and he was all right. And all of us others didn't keep anything anyway. Some of us didn't eat pork, but on the whole we managed, and as far as we are concerned, war conditions, according to the Bible and according to the Talmud, come first, and the you worked on the high holidays just as well as you worked on non-high holidays, just like on Shabbat. War doesn't stop because of a Jewish holiday. But anyway, the most useful thing the army sent us was portable showers. And once a week, the portable showers came, and this was very much appreciated by us. And I don't think the German army had these, because wherever you met Germans, they stank. And we smelled quite a few German prisoners of war near Bayeux.